Live from New York City, it's the Gary Mel Show. And now, your host, Gary Mel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming, on location filming today. We're going to talk about how the omega-3 fatty acids can help with asthma in your children and about 15 other important stories that we've selected overnight based upon high-quality peer-reviewed literature from respected institutions, though you will not see or hear any of this in the mainstream media. Also today we have a guest. We're going forward with our desire to see honesty brought to this whole measles debate. Right now, there are only 5 confirmed cases of measles in Rockland County, though we were led to believe there's over 130. There is now a mandate that you could be arrested and spend six months in jail if your child is found in any public space, meaning the moment your child leaves an apartment or house and hits the sidewalk, that's a public space. That's draconian. Oh, and by the way, I will also report today that there was a situation where an individual had a child that was not vaccinated and a SWAT team entered the house. And this was reported on ABC, quote, SWAT team with guns drawn raids an Arizona home for a toddler with a fever. The local and very corrupt organizations in every community dealing with the children. And why isn't it that the mainstream media has not done an original investigative report about how many of the children that are taken into foster care and become wards of the state are neglected, abused, and even used in drug testing? Yes, we have proof of that as well. So imagine now where you have bulletproof vests, loaded, militarized, weaponized, a whole group of hormone-bound men tearing in a door, pointing guns at families said because their little baby was going to be taken and forcibly given a vaccine. A couple things on that. A 2-year-old child with a fever, you do not vaccinate. If you do, then you are going against the actual vaccine medical literature. But who cares when it comes to this? That's how bad it's gotten. So we're going to bring in today a Dr. Merrill Nass, N-A-S-S, from Maine. She's a board-certified physician in internal medicine, but more importantly, she is an alpha medical doctor female who specializes in treating patients with Gulf War syndrome. And she is a fighter. She is tough. And she is looking at all the adverse reactions to the anthrax vaccine and vaccine safety and efficacy in general. So we're going to talk to her today about the fallacy of deadly infectious disease outbreaks and epidemics and the failures of vaccine efficacy. Also today, I'll be reporting, if time permits, from a Harvard fellow, PhD, in immunology about how unvaccinated children are not the threat we've been led to believe. And yet in almost every state, working behind the scenes are the vaccine makers and their lobbyists through ALEX, the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is this nefarious group of between 200 to 250 corporate entities that want their products, whatever it is, whether it's banking or medicine, mandated and any rules to limit them taken away, by meeting in exclusive resorts and giving bills that they've written to your state legislators. Your state legislator brings them back and then mandates them as laws, and you never know that. It is my belief that we should now, and I'm going to ask people in this audience to do it in every state you're hearing this, to write a letter. And if you can't write one, we'll write one for you. I have a team of lawyers working for me every day in my office. And I will have, and these are activist lawyers, these are tough, tough people. And we will write letters that you will then give to every single member of your state legislature and ask them a simple question. Have they ever met at any time while serving as a member of your state legislature with ALEC. If they have, they should resign, or you should shame them out of office, because they've already at that moment, they've compromised all principles of working for you. And the moment they meet with them, and the moment they accept in secret bills that they had no knowledge of, weren't intellectually smart enough to actually write themselves, these are not the smartest bulbs in the store, and let's be honest about that, but they're opportunists. God are politicians opportunists. Just think, wrap your mind around this. Why in the world will we get people who have this almost sociopathic, hyper-narcissistic, and a highly aggressive, adaptive-aggressive energy, the power over everything in our lives? These are the least qualified people to know what should be done at any level of our life. They're the worst examples of human nature. Look at Pelosi. Look at Schumer. Look at Rachel Maddow. Look at all these people. Do you really think that their interests align in harmonizing with what we need in the environment? No. With our health care? No. With what is right? Absolutely not. And yet we have made them more important than making our own decisions. So let's call them out. I will be publishing on a daily basis the list that you send me and of your legislators associated with ALEC. Anyhow, ALEC is the most powerful secret government in America. It has been around for dozens of years, and it has passed tens of thousands of laws. Every one of those laws should be rescinded now because they were only fit for them, not for us. Anyhow, we're going to talk about that. Also, time permitting, we're going to go to our audio files, and I'm going to continue sharing information on a G5, which is weaponizing everything. That's short. It's only 3 minutes 47 seconds. And then also, I'm continuing my series on why you should be afraid, very afraid of artificial intelligence. This one with Peter Haas from a TED Talk, 12 minutes. That's our show. Let's begin. The first study up comes from the Johns Hopkins University, published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine. And it was conducted by Dr. Emily Brigham, medical doctor and lead study author and assistant professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins. And what she found is this, that at the end of 6 months' study of children from Baltimore City by Johns Hopkins medicine researchers, there's more added that the more omega-3 fatty acids in the diet, it results in fewer asthma symptoms triggered by indoor air pollution. That's good. Omega-3 is important, and we need to have that. And by the way, the more omega-6 fatty acids, it has just the opposite effect. And that's why you don't want canola oil and corn oil and some of the other oils. Get your omega-3 fatty acids. They're much better. This is from Marshall University down in Huntington, West Virginia. And scientists tie walnuts to gene expressions related to breast cancer. What do I mean? I mean that the more walnuts you consume, you could suppress the growth and survival of people with breast cancer. You suppress the growth of breast cancer, and you increase their survival. This was led by Elaine Hardman, a professor in the Department of Biomedical Science at Marshall University and the Joan Edwards School of Medicine. And what they found was that just 2 ounces, now 2 ounces, to give you an example, is it's more or less about 48 grams would be about 2 ounces. That's a tablespoon. That's it, a tablespoon. I don't want a tablespoon. I want a handful of walnuts or any nuts each day in your diet. And if you did that for 2 weeks, it significantly changed the gene expression in confirmed breast cancers. Now, that's important, and this was published in the journal Nutrition Research. Quote, consumption of walnuts has slowed breast cancer growth and reduced the risk of mammary cancer in mice. Building on this research, our team hypothesized that walnut consumption would alter gene expression in pathologically confirmed breast cancer of women in a direction that would decrease breast cancer growth and survival. I agree, but what about the studies from Loma Linda University showing that the more nuts you consume, and there are at least 20 studies on the more nuts you consume, the more protected your body is from cancers. So let's prevent the disease in the first place. From Bar Ilam University in Israel, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications, that sleep, we've been talking a lot about sleep, increases the chromosome dynamics that clear out DNA damage accumulated during the daytime. Now, just so we understand in lay language, whatever we do during the day, it has to be rectified at night. If you've worked out hard, your muscles have to relax. You have to flush out lactic acid from that exercise through your lymphatic system, get it out of the system. You have to detoxify from the broken down cells. The more physical work you do, including exercise, the more damage you're going to have. So that damage has to be repaired. The more exposure you've had to any chemicals in your environment, the more you might have exposed your body by drinking alcohol or being around primary or secondary smoke or by being in an environment that is toxic or being around new furniture with formaldehyde outgassing and carpet with formaldehyde gassing, even clothes to keep them from being moth-eaten since a lot of them are made in countries that have no air conditioning or little air conditioning. They fumigate them. And that with the use of formaldehyde, embalming fluid. That's very, very volatile, and it's a known toxicant. So when you're wearing clothes, you may not be aware that they've had this done to them. So you're exposed to toxins all day long. At nighttime, that's when the body turns on the janitorial services and starts cleaning it out. So throughout our evolution, sleep has remained universal and essential to all organisms with a nervous system, including invertebrates such as flies and worms, even jellyfish. But the reason why animals sleep, despite the continuous threat of predators, still remains a mystery and is considered among the biggest unanswered questions in life sciences. But we know we have to sleep, and we know if we don't, we're not going to secrete melatonin. And melatonin is that big vacuum cleaner that comes out, and it's a hormone from the pineal gland, and it helps in rebalancing our biochemistry and our immune system, but it also protects us against cancer. It helps with re-regulate our circadian rhythms. But DNA damage can be caused by everything. Using your cell phone on your ear, radiation. Sitting in front of a computer, radiation. Well, some can be non-ionizing radiation, what we call electromagnetic pulses, but it's still damaging the DNA, oxidative stress. Even neuronal activity. So DNA repair systems within the cell correct this damage. And the current work shows that during wakeful hours, when chromosome dynamics are low, DNA damage accumulates and reaches an unsafe level. So when you go to bed at night, you are increasing the chromosome dynamics, normalizing the levels of DNA damage in each single neuron. And apparently this DNA maintenance process is not efficient enough during the wakeful period, and you've got to be asleep. Hence the whole idea of, I've given you many examples, how to sleep, don't eat within 3 hours, don't drink water within 3 hours, have a pad over your eyes so there's no background light, don't allow blue light from your computer or phones on, stay away from electromagnetic pulses, including digital clocks and radios by your head, and simple things like that. Even sitting and writing down the top 10 things that have created anxiety that day that you want to deal with tomorrow, and then write them down. Tomorrow I'm going to deal with this, this, and that disconnects them from the urgency of dealing with them in that moment. Remember, every cell in your body accumulates wear and tear. That's the purpose of sleep. And that's what this does. That's what this is showing, that sleep helps you clean up the body and deactivate a lot of the inflammatory responses and protects the chromosomes and protects the telomeres, which are the end caps of chromosomes, from unraveling and shortening your lifespan. All the more reason to get a good night's sleep. Also, maternal diets during pregnancy can modulate the risk of ADHD symptoms in children. And this was from Barcelona Institute for Global Health in Spain. And this was part of what was known as the INMA project that dealt with this whole idea of what goes into a pregnant woman's body is going to impact later the development of the child. And the results were published in the Journal of Pediatrics. And one of the things they showed is this. If you have in the umbilical cord plasma, and hence into the developing fetus, the omega-3 fatty acids reaching the fetus, you have a lower risk of ADHD symptoms 7 years later. But if you have more of the omega-6 fatty acids, you increase the risk. Once again, go towards the oils we talk about. Extra virgin, first-pressed olive oil, cold-pressed. Coconut oil, organic. The flaxseed oil, hemp oil, the avocado oil, almond oil, these are all healthy, good. Walnut oil, healthy and good oils. Stay away from the clarified, clear, light oils. They are the omega-6s, and those you don't want. From Baylor College of Medicine, published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Metabolism, stabilizing the ends of chromosomes with NAD, could treat age-related diseases. Now, this is something I've been mentioning for the last 5 years. And it's about what happens at the cellular level that we should be in control of that will help prevent our cells from prematurely aging. Now, I've given you the information on, let's say, resveratrol, L-carnosine, pycnogenol, and also NAD. And according to the study led by researchers at Baylor College of Medicine, they've uncovered a new strategy that can potentially treat age-related disease and decline. And it demonstrates that shortening of the telomeres, you've heard me say if you're sedentary, you shorten the telomeres. Under chronic stress, you shorten the telomeres. Malnourished, shorten the telomeres. If you're not exercising and you're a body muscle mass, shorten the telomeres. If you're eating a meat-based and standard diet, shorten the telomeres. So that means that the end of the chromosomes, where your telomeres are, you impair a class of enzymes called sirtuins, S-I-R-T-U-I-N-S, which play an important role in maintaining cell fitness by affecting many metabolic processes and repairing damaged chromosomes. So the researchers showed that restoring the activity of the sirtuins with a small compound stabilized telomeres, and reducing DNA damage, which in turn improved liver disease in this mouse model. These studies show that maintaining telomere length might help you sustain the regenerative capability of cells and tissues and improve the outcome of disease. And NAD is one of the things that does that. And finally, 1 billion people will be newly exposed to diseases like dengue fever as the temperatures rise. And this is from Georgetown University Medical Center, and it's published in the PLOS. And what it's saying is that the disease-carrying mosquitoes are increasing, and they're going to places they've never been before as temperatures rise. And guess what temperature it was this week in the Arctic? Just take a guess. Well, I'll answer that if you're not coming up with the answer yourself. It was over 70 degrees in the Arctic this week. That means that it's changing the whole dynamic up there, and that is not good. And that's something we should all be very concerned about. Because where people say, hey, isn't it great? We're up here and it's warmer. No, it's not. The trees have not adapted. So there's going to be all kinds of problems. So we're concerned about one more reason thrown on to all the other concerns concerning global warming and the incidence not only of diseases like dengue fever, but also the destruction now of our trees. Hundreds of millions of trees are being destroyed because now they're being invaded a lot by these beetles. And then as they die, that becomes the next mess that we have to clean up. So, We're going to deal with all this in time with positive solutions. And one of the positive solutions is that right now we can all do two things that can help impact global warming and slow it down. Even as it's increasing, the CO2 levels increased by 2% this year. Really bad. And because of urban growth, because of all these mega cities around the world, including in China, because we're using more of nature's resources rather than less. So on the one hand, we have all this, let's clean up the environment. Everybody goes, yeah. But no one's doing anything as a percentage, about 3% are. But as I told you yesterday, only 2.7% of people in the United States are making healthier choices each day, which means that, 97.3% are making unhealthy choices. So it's going to take a lot more than a small percentage to change around. But here's what we could do. Go vegan. Go on a healthy plant-based diet. Stop buying stuff you don't really need. And most importantly, let's get our states and local communities, as they're doing in Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, and other countries, to begin planting trees. We need to plant about 20 billion trees in the United States to help lower our impact here because we've done so much deforestation. And you can do that now by these drones that can drop tree pods. You can do it by planes that can drop a man tree pods, and they're little spikes. They're only about 6 inches long, and they drop hundreds of thousands, and boom, they go into an area that you're wanting to seed, and then they stick in the ground, then they can grow. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Hire local people and plant them. And that's what they've done in many places. So that's the good news, that what we can do if we choose to. We're 24 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back, and we're going to go to one or two of your questions. Please stay with us.
William from the Bronx would like to know if papaya capsules can break down dairy and meat products and fatty products. Thank you.
In and of themselves, no. If you ate papaya after a meal, let's say that you made a nice porridge or a steel-cut oatmeal, not the instant oatmeal, and you took a half a papaya, a medium-sized papaya, you peeled it, left the seeds in, that's very important. You dice that up, and after it's all made, you put a little extra organic first-grade maple syrup, which has healing nutrients. A lot of studies are showing that in it, maybe a tablespoon. And then mix in your papaya, mix in some bananas, mix in some apricots, and then have that as your breakfast. That will facilitate better digestion. Oat beta glucan, lots of fiber, about 20 grams of fiber just in that one meal, that would be good. But most people do not have really good digestion based upon those that I have worked with. They generally have eaten too many highly acidic foods, eaten wrong combinations of foods, just jumped everything in a meal down their throat at the same time, and they end up eating too much food, improperly masticated or chewed. So you want to take your time first and eat foods that digest it without complications. That would mean beans and legumes and lentils, they're all in the same group, and pulses. Starchy vegetables, like some of the squash, for example, and then seaweed, a whole grain, whether that's brown rice or millet or quinoa, and that all digest well together. But I would still add in, if you are over the age of 40 and you find that you find some bloating or gaseousness or slow digestion, don't be drinking a lot of water with that meal, because that dilutes the hydrochloric acid, dilutes digestive enzymes, because the body will already be be putting a lot of enzymes like lipase to break down fat, pepsin, pepsinogen to break down the proteins and amino acids. The temperature of the stomach should not be cold, because when you go drinking a cold beverage, that adversely affects your hydrochloric acid and dilutes it. So drink, if you're going to drink something like a vegetable, drink it at room temperature. That helps. And it's ideal to do a light walk, even on a VersaClimber or on a step machine, for a half hour after a meal. That will facilitate better digestion and utilization and elimination. And that's what you want. But papaya enzymes out of a tablet by itself will not do that. It doesn't mean it's of no value, but you got to look at the primary way that you digest foods, and it's not by tablets. And then you help facilitate that. Papain, the core of a pineapple, is better than papaya. But take the two together and it's terrific. Add in some fennel, either fresh fennel, which tastes like licorice, and you can put fennel in a salad, which better facilitates the digestion of your salad. Salads don't take long to digest anyhow. And then even some cinnamon. So if you're eating a cereal and you put cinnamon on it, you put some fennel seeds and you put some anise in there, you're going to have a much better digestion. Okay, we'll take another call.
Hi, Gary. This is Jeremy. I heard you talking about green tea and black tea. Somebody had a question that might cause esophagus cancer. My question is the fluoride in green and black tea dangerous? And if so, what do you recommend? Thanks very much.
Well, first of all, if you look at the scientific literature, that's not the issue and that's not a problem at all. What's the problem was that for years, many of the commercial tea companies were making the tea bag and that little paper description at the top with chemicals. And those chemicals could leach off into the hot water. That was a problem. But now most of your better companies have dispersed with that or use natural materials that don't leach chemicals, including formaldehyde or including fluoride. There's natural what are called background minerals or metals in everything that you eat. After all, one-third of the soil on the planet has aluminum in it. It's one of the three highest minerals or metals that we can find in soil. That does not mean, however, that growing something organically, you're going to end up having a lot of aluminum that becomes a counterbalancing benefit. You eat organic, but it's got aluminum. It's not the way it works. And so you will have, depending upon how far you can test it down into the multi-parts per billion, you'll find heavy metals in almost everything. But those do not pose a threat to us, versus when you get a vaccine, that does pose a threat because you're getting upwards of 5,000% more mercury, for example, or aluminum in a single vaccine than what your body could possibly handle if you're an adult, let alone a little, 8-pound child. So there are heavy metals in the soil. You will always test for some heavy metals, but they are virtually minimal to almost non-existent in the body. It's what we take in intentionally. If you eat a can of tuna, if you eat a can of sardines, if you eat a can of even the can of wild salmon, the can itself is generally aluminum. And the soldering that keeps the can together, though not a lot of them today use that soldering, but you'll still find it. If you open up a can and look to see, is that can's, at some point, did it come together because there's a little solder? That solder had lead in it, and that would leach out depending upon the acidity of the food that was inside. Tomatoes are a big time leacher. That's why you should always get your tomatoes and tomato sauces and diced tomatoes in glass jars that don't provide that problem. But now you go back to your original comment. The green tea, the oolong tea, the white tea are non-toxic, and they contain the nutrients our body needs to help prevent DNA damage, to help prevent cancer. They even help us with bacterial and viral infections. But it was the tea bag or the temperature of the tea. As I mentioned recently, esophageal inflammation, corrosion is due to two factors. One is GERD, where you're taking generally coffee which is highly anabolic and you shouldn't be drinking, and that comes back up into the esophagus, which has thin mucous membranes, and it irritates it, inflames it, and then it becomes cancerous. Or you take a hot beverage, and the hot beverage, remember, if you pour some hot water on your hand and it burns it, your mucous membranes are even more hypersensitive to that temperature. So when you're putting it in your mouth, your tongue, the lining of your tongue, your gums, your esophagus, that's all mucous membrane. And that's very susceptible to hot temperatures, and hence we should be eating and drinking things not hot, but at moderate temperatures, room temperatures, warm but not hot. Okay? That's all the time we have. We're going to now go over and say hello to our guest who is standing by up in Maine, Dr. Meryl, M-E-R-Y-L, Nass, N-A-S-S. I gave you her background earlier in the program, and her website where she blogs is anthraxvaccine.blogspot.com. Nice to have you with us today, Meryl.
Hi. Thank you for asking me to come back, Gary.
Yeah, the first time I interviewed you was back in 1992.
Maybe 93. Something like that.
Yeah, well, we were looking at the Gulf War Center, and I was doing a documentary on it and an article. Well, if we listened to the mainstream media reports, we would believe that vaccination compliance is dropping rapidly and more children are unvaccinated. And the outbreaks of infectious diseases over recent years, notably measles, mumps, and pertussis, or whooping cough, are due to this media telling us that parents are not vaccinating. However, when we look at the actual honest statistics, there is no significant drop-off of vaccination compliance at all, and the media refuses to report whether those contracting these illnesses are vaccinated or not. And there are no studies being discussed about genotype of the infection, meaning can taking a measles vaccine create measles outbreaks? Because when I read Merck's package insert, the very first contraindication of the vaccine was measles. So you take the measles vaccine, you end up with measles, and you can shed that measles vaccine antigens like viruses for weeks at home. You rub your nose about 200 to 300 times a day in your mouth. Every doorknob you touch, every appliance you touch, the toothbrush, the television, remote control, all that, your computer, you're going to be infecting it. And then those microbes, both bacteria and viruses, can live for long periods of time unless they're disinfected with hydrogen peroxide or alcohol, and we're never told to do that. So this is especially important for measles vaccine because it uses live virus, which can shed and infect others. So begin by putting these so-called epidemics into a greater, more honest scientific perspective, especially infectious rates between the vaccinated and unvaccinated, and the problem of vaccines having a high failure rate, and then follow that by what are the most egregious lies we're being told by the dangers of these outbreaks. And by the way, the liberal media and the conservative media are equally guilty of being nothing more today, in my personal opinion, than propagandists for the deep state. Your thoughts?
Thanks for asking me so many questions, which I may or may not remember all of them. So the first thing, I totally agree with you. I think the media, the CDC, and those in the know who are providing information to the mass media are, this is fake news. They're lying. The rates of vaccination overall, state by state or nationally, are not going down. They're just not. You can look at the CDC website. They give you vaccination rates for different years, for different vaccines. In fact, in the state of New York, the exemption rate, the effective exemption rate, according to CDC, for the MMR vaccine is 2.8%. In other words, 97.2% of students, they don't say what year on this particular chart, are vaccinated with two doses of MMR in New York State. That's pretty high. There are only three other states that have a higher uptake of the MMR vaccine than New York. Mississippi, which doesn't allow any exemptions except medical, Maryland and West Virginia. So, in any event, there are pockets, certainly there are pockets throughout the country of people who don't vaccinate. There have always been those pockets. There have always been many religions, including the Amish and some of the ultra-Orthodox Jews. There are lots of different reasons why people don't vaccinate. Of course, the vaccines do pose considerable risks to relatively small numbers of people, but when you get lots of vaccines, the risks add up, and sometimes they multiply. For example, if you get the MMRV, measles, mumps, rubella, with varicella or chickenpox attached, you are likely, your rate of seizures after children receive that vaccine is double what it would be if you gave those vaccines separately. If you gave the varicella by itself, waited at least a month, and gave the MMR separately. So the science of how all these vaccines interact, how they should be given, how they should be timed, the scientific studies have never been done. The vaccine schedule has never been put to the test. There are many different vaccine schedules that are used all over the world. In the United States, the factor that defines the vaccine schedule most strongly is when CDC thinks people are going to go to the doctor for checkups. And they make the vaccines fit the dates that you go for checkups. So that's a problem. As everybody has pointed out, almost all, particularly the newer vaccines, are tested not against inert placebos. They're not tested against saline, but they're either tested against other vaccines or tested against vaccine adjuvants that are called placebos. And their safety profile is based on not causing more adverse events with the new vaccine, the vaccine that's being tested, than the adjuvant alone or the other vaccine causes. Obviously, doing it that way is clearly intended to obscure the actual side effect profile of any vaccine. And I'll give you an example. When Prevnar was licensed, the original Prevnar, Prevnar 7, seven serotypes were in it. This is a pneumococcal vaccine for children. It was tested against a meningococcal C vaccine. That vaccine is not even licensed in the United States, but it is now licensed in Europe. And they said, well, the side effects were no worse than with the meningococcal C vaccine. So we think this is a good vaccine, and we'll license it. And when the Prevnar 13 vaccine came along, which is what is generally used in the U.S. now, they tested it against the Prevnar 7 and said, well, the side effect profile looks roughly the same, so we think it's safe, and we'll use it. Now, because the meningitis C vaccine isn't even licensed in the U.S., we don't have in the U.S. a reliable profile of what those side effects are. And the way FDA now allows manufacturers to write their labels, you can't tell how often a particular side effect happens. Like they'll say, these things have been reported in under 1%, or these side effects have been reported in 1% to 10%, and these side effects have been reported in more than 10%. So, well, more than 10%, is it in 90%? Is it in 50%? Is it in 10%? You don't know. And how strongly has it been linked? And they give you a huge laundry list of almost every side effect under the sun to make it very difficult to tease out which ones are random and which ones are actually due to the vaccine. So we have a very poor database to go on to figure out how safe vaccines really are.
What are your thoughts and comments about the measures being taken by Rockland County in New York to penalize families with unvaccinated children?
Rockland County is a very amazing and unusual example of either local government overreach or an experiment. So normally, first of all, despite what you hear in the media, measles is an expected disease in the United States. It is no longer endemic in the U.S. That means it does not circulate here. It's not present within the community at all times, not in the United States, not in North America, and not in South America. So in a sense, it's been wiped out. But it has not been wiped out from the whole rest of the world. And so people, and it has a long incubation period of up to 2 weeks, sometimes a little longer. So people can travel overseas, be exposed to measles, come home, or a new traveler can come in who's incubating measles and doesn't know it, and then they develop measles here. And on average, that causes 10 to 20 different outbreaks every year in the United States. And it is the job of the local public health departments, with or without the CDC, to find those cases, to isolate them, to quarantine them, to warn people, to make sure nobody's critically ill as a result. And the critical illness occurs in less than 1 in 1,000. And to make those outbreaks go away. And that's what happens. And that's what's been happening in the United States, you know, since the 1970s or 80s. And it's happened very successfully. Even in the highly publicized Disneyland epidemic, the whole thing lasted, I believe, under 2 months. What's happened in Rockland is it's lasted a lot longer. And the claim has, so almost 6 months, which is sort of unprecedented. And the claim has been made that it's due to 7 people coming in from Israel, one after the other, starting new brush fires. And they just haven't been able to put out the fires altogether because of this. But real data about when did these people come, did they all come at once or did they come one at a time? How is it that they spread it so much? Were they quarantined properly? You know, were appropriate measures taken? Why is this outbreak so different from all the other, you know, hundreds of outbreaks that have occurred in the United States over the last 35 years? What's different? So we don't know that. What we do know is that Rockland is one pocket of many in the United States where people have not vaccinated their children as much as some other places. And that usually isn't a problem. If the disease is not brought in, it's not a problem. Or if the disease comes in and it's managed correctly and you quarantine the people with the disease and you quarantine the people that have been exposed to them, everything is good and it goes away. For whatever reason, it didn't go away in Rockland. The rumor has it, I don't know, I don't have first-hand experience on this, that people were not quarantined and that the public health response was lacking. And this allowed it to spread both to more people and over a longer duration than probably would have occurred if the appropriate measures had been taken. Now, this outbreak occurred in a setting of vaccine hysteria because over 30 states currently in their legislatures have bills pending to try to get rid of vaccine exemptions. So we know what happened in California, and the Disneyland outbreak was used as the cudgel to get rid of personal belief exemptions in California, and I think religious exemptions also, and medical exemptions were tightened up so that doctors who gave more medical exemptions than others have been vilified. You know, Richard Pan, a doctor in the legislature, has said, doctors are making money out of giving vaccine exemptions and we have to stop them. One has been had his license examined by the Board of Registration and Medicine in California. So anyway, that's what's happening. And the Rockland outbreak somehow hasn't been managed or occurred the way all the others are. And suddenly, the county executive, who is a retired Bronx detective, has decided. Now, in Rockland, they've already taken all these vaccinated kids based on zip code and told them they can't come to school until all the measles outbreaks are done. So there's lots of kids who have been out of school for weeks and months, and their parents have to homeschool them, or perhaps they're being sent tutors at home. Now the county executive says, we're going to target these unvaccinated children and tell them they can't. They're going to be quarantined. They're what's it called when you take a prisoner, get home arrest, something like that, house arrest. So all these kids who are not vaccinated in his jurisdiction are told they can't go into a building apart from their house, into public spaces. Now these are kids who are healthy. For most of them, there's no evidence they've been exposed to measles. They simply are unvaccinated. But consider this. There's plenty of children in the school who are vaccinated who either didn't become immune. That's somewhere between 3 and 8% of those who've gotten two doses of MMR. Or their immunity has already waned. And probably for a lot of the teachers, the immunity has waned, and older people, but for some students as well. They are not being checked. They're not being sent home from school, and yet they may have no more immunity than these kids who weren't vaccinated. So when you look at this, you know, from 30,000 feet, you say, wow, this isn't really about keeping non-immune people home to protect them or to protect others. This is really about create a publicity stunt, and it seems to be directed primarily at ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews, who stand out because they look different. They often speak a different language, Yiddish. And for some reason, the reason I say this is because it's not only happening in Rockland County, but it's also similar things, but not to this extent, have happened in New Jersey and in Brooklyn and Queens, where the health department has told the principals of Jewish religious Hasidic and ultra-Orthodox religious schools to send home unvaccinated children. So it's been going on since December.
Okay, we're running a little short. I want to get to a few more points, and I appreciate your depth on that. First, if you vaccinate all these children who are unvaccinated but healthy, you then put them in a risk of, A, getting measles themselves, but also they're going to be shedding. Now they're into a school shedding.
So it's hard to know how much shedding goes on because CDC has covered that up. What was recently found, hat tip to Dr. Mercola, is that CDC genotyped about 200 measles cases from the Disneyland outbreak year, and found that over 70 of them were vaccine strain measles. So it's known that this happens. You vaccinate a kid, and then they catch measles from their injection site, and they get a generalized measles. They may get a rash. And the doctors, frankly, can't distinguish between the two. It's said by CDC to be a milder form of measles. But since CDC doesn't want us to know this happens, there really isn't good data in the United States about it. So turned out that many people, after they got vaccinated, developed measles after the Disney outbreak. Question is, of all these Rockland cases, because they've pushed, you know, vaccinations and provided lots of free clinics to give people vaccinations, how many of these newly vaccinated people are then having measles and adding to the case numbers and adding to the hysteria about what's going on in Rockland County or New Jersey or Queens or Brooklyn? Whether they shed to others, again, I think it's likely they do because the virus, live virus, has been found in the urine, has been found in throat swabs. But CDC claims that there are no reported cases of people who've gotten the vaccine shedding and causing measles in others. I think there probably are.
Meryl, who in their right mind would believe anything the CDC says, since it actually owns the patents on 57 vaccines and is making upwards of 50% of its income by licensing these to Merck and other companies? So there's self-interest, and therefore that disqualifies them from being objective. Two points that we have found. Richard Gale and I reviewed all the scientific literature, and we found zero Not a single death from measles in over 15 years, but 412 deaths in those who were vaccinated for measles. So the vaccine killed over 400 people. The measles itself killed no one. And that's where none of the media, none of the scientific community, none of the people at the CDC want to face the issue that it's not the measles, which historically you get it, and you're immune for life. You get chickenpox, you're immune for life. And these are not long-lasting immunities. They're not complete immunities. And they can, because we've seen how many people who've been vaccinated for conditions get it. So they're lying on all these, so it is political. But more importantly is how many babies are dying or becoming vaccine injured because of the hepatitis B vaccine. That is the most fraudulent vaccine, because when you test the mother and she is tested for hepatitis, if she tests negative, then the child is negative. There is no earthly reason in the world except to make money to give the every single child in America within an hour of its birth, they're given the hepatitis B vaccine, and that's contributed a large percentage of severe injuries. But what are the problems with the hepatitis vaccine that you're aware of, and what would be your argument for having it removed from the CDC childhood vaccine schedule?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There is no excuse for giving those babies hepatitis B when their mother is negative. I just put on my blog how the state of Oregon says the reason they're doing it is because maybe doctors and hospitals lose the lab slip and don't know that the mother's positive. So they might miss a case here or there, and therefore they have to vaccinate 4 million kids a year for hep B. This is a crime. The reason they get away with it is because you don't know if a child is neurologically injured at the time they're born. How can you tell? So you vaccinate them with a vaccine that has caused a lot of neurologic injuries in older people. The program, the hep B program, was stopped in France after they gave 25 million doses. And lots of people came down with unusual neuromuscular conditions. It's been well described by Dr. Marc Girard in France. So then they started vaccinating newborns because you couldn't, you know, prove that they weren't born with the condition if they got it from hep B on the day of birth. Anyway, that's a crime, and it tells you that the CDC, an organization that has come up with the idea to vaccinate newborns with a vaccine they don't need, is not a public health organization. It is simply
It is. Meryl, thank you for coming on. We look forward to more discussion, because I want to get into a longer discussion with you about all the vets who have served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and are now vaccine damaged, and they're not being treated, recognized, or compensated. That'll be our next discussion.
All right. Very good. Nice talking to you again.
Thank you. Dr. Meryl Nass, her website is anthraxvaccine.blogspot.com. Just a closing thought, I'm going to be hiring a couple carpenters, some carpentry work, and pay a good amount of money. You have to bring your own tools. You have to be experienced, and you can call our number, 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, if you want. It's about a week's worth of work. Secondly, we're going to premiere our vaccine, newest vaccine documentary on Sunday. I believe it's at 1 o'clock. Go to prn.fm. It's free, and we're premiering it this Sunday over the Internet, so you'll have a chance to see it and get up to date on it. It's very powerful. And that's it for today. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.